This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air. Kia ora and welcome to the Pet Podcast. Pet is a dark and humorous short story collection that explores our relationships with children, lovers and other animals. The stories in this collection were written by Catherine Van Beek. In episode 17, The Nor'wester, three kids escape their home life on an artificial lake, read by Jaya Beach Robertson. This podcast contains strong language. Please use discretion.
Thick white vomit slides down the hot car door. Mum, Heather and I stand safely out of range on the grass verge. Leo rests his head against the side of the open window. "What a waste of yogurt," he says. "Oh, well," says Mum. She wipes the mess off the door with a tissue, then reaches in and dabs at Leo. "Oh, you've got some on your uniform." The hazard lights clack on off, as cars and trucks flash past. Behind us, fields of golden oats wave in the warm breeze. I twirl my orca figurine in the cage of my fingers. Its plastic skin feels warm and smooth. "Look at the sky," says Heather. "It looks like blue and white sandwich." "There's a nor'wester coming," Mum says. Dust rises over the black road and Mum shoos us back into the car. "Let's go home." The three of us race down the deserted streets in our togs, our towels whipping around us like capes and our jandals slapping against the asphalt as we try to outrun the wind. "I feel like I'm being chased by a hairdryer," Leo shrieks. We run past sections with no houses and pedestrian crossings with no people. We tear down empty cul-de-sacs, slide down the grass slope at the end, and then jump over the low chain fence, skidding out onto the beach like long jumpers. On the shore, there's a big faded sign with a picture showing what the artificial lake was supposed to look like. In the drawing, the water is blue, the suspension bridge is red, and there are hot pools by the shore. In reality, there aren't any hot pools. The bridge is grey and the weeds got into the lake. But we don't care about weeds. We drop our towels and run into the water, yelping like seals. Leo splashes in the shallows and Heather shines like a mermaid in the ripples. She has a bikini now, even though Mum said it was inappropriate. "I'll be allowed to get one when I'm in year 8 too." "You'll be like Talikum and I'll be Dawn," Heather says. "You always get to be Dawn." "Well, duh," she says. She doesn't mean I'm a whale. She just means that she's more like Dawn with her blonde ponytail and her gymnastic skills. I make my arms into a dorsal fin and wade towards her. "Ladies and gentlemen," Heather says, "the amazing Talikum." I sink under the water, holding my breath. Heather grips my arms and places one foot on my shoulders and then the other. She releases her hands and I feel her weight shift as she moves into a crouch, then stands and extends her arms like a dancer. We rise from the lake together. I see Heather's shadow wobble over the water for a moment before we veer sideways and she lands with a splash. She stands up in the water, grinning. "Now the finale," she says. "Who will I be?" asks Leo. "You can be a seagull." "That's not fair. Rosa gets to be a killer whale." "You can be the audience." Heather wades closer to the shore and prances up and down in front of Leo, as though she's walking beside a tank in front of a crowd. I sneak up on her, my body beneath the water until I'm really close. Then I propel myself up with a roar, grab her ponytail and pull her down into the lake. Heather screams and I drag her further and further out. Finally, she stops screaming. Her body floats out on the water like a plucked flower. Leo pulls an imaginary phone from his togs. "Is this 911? Send an ambulance to SeaWorld. There's a crazy whale on the loose." He swims over to Heather to give her CPR. "It's too late," she says. "I'm already dead." Leo transforms into an ambulance and pulls Heather away to the morgue. I float on my back and look out over my toes at our town. Past the empty sections are the skeletons of the new houses that are going up. And past them are the grey and white houses that have already been built. They all have high fences and neat gardens. You can't see any washing, drying or any old cars, because that's against the town rules. Anything ugly has to be kept hidden away where no one can see it. "I'm hungry," Leo says. "Let's make veggie enchiladas for dinner," says Heather. I look at her. "Dad doesn't like it." "Who cares?" Heather scoffs, pulling out her bikini-clad chest. "Veggie enchiladas! Veggie enchiladas!" yells Leo, splashing to the shore. We follow him out and run back home through the flat, barren streets. Mum covers Dad's dinner with a fresh tea towel. Nice work, kids. Leo looks up from wiping the table. Does Dad like them? I don't think he'll notice they're vegan if you don't tell him, Mum says. She glances out the window and we look to see Dad's black Land Cruiser coming up the driveway. It's a company car, which means Leo gets in trouble if he vomits in it. Mum says Leo will grow out of spewing in the car and wetting the bed, but he's not showing any signs of improvement so far. Right, I've got clients to see, Mum says, grabbing her briefcase. Be good. She walks into the hall. We hear Dad open the door. Did you forget I had a meeting tonight? Mum asks. The wind whooshes in and ruffles the pages of Leo's library book. The front door bangs shut, then Mum starts her car and Dad goes into the study. I look at Heather. Will you help me with my diorama? No. Please, I have to have it ready for the expo on Friday. I'll let you dress Dawn. Heather rolls her eyes and flounces down the hallway in a way that means, okay, then. I follow, picking up my supplies from my room on the way. My room is small and pink and babyish, and Heather's room is white and gold and sophisticated. I set up the diorama in the middle of her chevron rug. The bottom half of the diorama is blue, like a pool, and on the top half I've painted the crowds on the stands. Mr. Peterson attached a bit of cardboard in the middle like a shelf, and that represents the top of the water. I punched a hole in it with my scissors and wiggle the orca figurine in. Heather sits down and picks up my Barbie. The only way to do the wetsuit is to draw it on. That's okay. She'll never be able to wear her party dress again. Heather undresses the Barbie and pops the lid off the Vivid. What else do you have to do for your diorama? I have to write facts on the side of the box, like that orca and killer whales are the same thing, and that killer whales have never killed anyone in the wild. And I can't remember any other facts. Can I watch a video on your phone? The first video I click is a baby orca in the wild being taken from its parents. It cries as it's lifted from the water, just like a human baby would. That one's too sad. Find another one, Heather says. The next video explains that wild orca fins stick straight up like flags, but when they're kept in captivity, their fins collapse and flop down. Why do they do that? Heather asks. I guess they're depressed. Heather looks at my Telecom figurine. She stands up and walks out of the room. When she comes back in, she's holding a lighter. She pulls Telecom out of the sea and holds his fin over the flame. I watch in awe as it slowly droops. Perfect, Heather says. The room smells like Vivid and burning. Shall I melt Dawn too? Heather asks, flicking the lighter. No! I shriek. I know. Why don't we make a diorama of Telecom attacking her? We could have her guts coming out and stuff. Can you imagine what Mr. Peterson would say? He'd say, settle down, girls, says Heather in a funny voice. Settle, Petal, I mimic, and Heather laughs, and I laugh too. Calm the farm, I say, because that's another silly thing that Mr. Peterson says. And then Heather laughs until she cries. Oh my gosh, Dad will hear. I giggle, but Heather looks at me, and I say, settle, Petal, again, and she screams and flops on the floor in hysterics. And then the door flies open. What's going on in here? Asks Dad. He stands in the doorway, filling it with his broad shoulders and his stripy shirt and his stupid tan trousers. He thinks he looks cooler than the farmers he sells things to, but in reality, he looks just like them. Dad stares at Heather as she lies on the floor like a fish trying to suppress her big gasping laughs. I said, what's going on? I hear Heather make a kind of snuffle, and that makes everything even funnier. I try to choke down a chuckle, but it comes out in a snort, and then Heather and I burst out giggling. That's it, says Dad. It's time you did something useful. Heather sits up and pulls herself onto the bed. We're doing something useful. I'm helping Rosa with her homework. Get up. I spring up, but Heather stays on the bed. Dad picks up Heather's hockey stick from beside her desk and whacks the bed with it. But we are doing something useful. Since you're stopping me getting any work done, you can tidy up the study. But that's your room. Dad thumps the bed again, and this time Heather gets up. We follow Dad down the hall. Leo's door is open slightly, and I know he's watching through the crack. Dad directs us into the study. There's a lot of stuff on Mum's side, but it's just piles of all the work she has to do. It's Dad's side that's really bad. There are brochures and magazines all over his desk and post-it notes on the wall. Right, says Dad, arms out, this is for the bin. Heather holds her arms out like a forklift. Dad piles on cardboard folders filled with information about milking machines. I'm happy to throw this out, Heather mutters. Dad ignores her. He pretends he doesn't know that Heather and I have gone vegan. He just heaps more milking machine brochures on her until they almost go up to her chin. Then he tears the post-it notes off the wall and puts them in my hands. Right, he says. I lead Heather down the hall and open the door for her. The garage smells dry and musty, and the wind rattles the roller doors trying to get in. I lift the recycling bin lid and Heather drops her armful in. I scrunch up the post-it notes. They all have inspirational quotes written on them. Heather gives a disdainful snort, but I can tell she's crying. We close the garage door and try to sneak down the hall to our bedrooms. But as we pass the study, Dad steps out. Where are you going? To bed, says Heather. We haven't finished in here. Yes, we have. We have not, growls Dad. He directs us back in and points to the awards on his dusty shelf. I pull a tissue from the box on Mum's desk and wipe them down. Most of them are pointy plastic things he got from his work ages ago. I don't know why they give awards for selling milk machines. The most beautiful award is the tallest. It's a golden man holding a glass rugby ball. Dad got it because he used to play rugby before we were born. You can empty the rubbish, Dad says to Heather. Do it yourself, says Heather. Dad grabs the hockey stick and thumps it on the floor. Heather picks up the bin and stomps off with it. Dad shuffles the things on Mum's desk into one big pile, which is silly because it will just make her annoyed. Heather slams the garage door and stomps back down the hall. Stop that, yells Dad. Stop what? Asks Heather innocently as she continues stomping. Stop making that racket! I'm just walking, says Heather, stomping even louder. Dad tears out of the study and pins Heather against the wall with his hand around her neck. In his other hand, he holds the hockey stick. The rubbish bin separates their bodies like a shield. You can't hit me with my own hockey stick, Heather screams. Dad raises the stick, but Leah rushes out of his room and grabs hold of Dad's arm. Dad spins around and looks as though he's about to whack Leo, and then we hear the release of the roller door and the sound of Mum driving into the garage. Go to bed, says Dad, shaking the stick one more time. Leo goes back into his room, but Heather doesn't move. Go to bed. You said we weren't allowed to. I'm just following instructions. I walk down the hallway, but I stay inside my bedroom door so I can see what's happening. Mum walks in with her briefcase. Oh, hello, she says. She notices our clammy faces. What are you girls doing? Dad's making us tidy up your study, Heather says, bursting into tears. For God's sake, Jason, it's past their bedtime, Mum says. Come on, girls, off to bed. Heather puts the rubbish bin down and walks off towards the bathroom. Step, 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 stomp. Step, 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 stomp. At the end of the school day, we lean against the fence and wait for Mum to pick us up. I hug my diorama against the hot wind. I filled the bottom half with blue cellophane waves, and I hope Mum arrives before they all blow away. When she finally pulls up, she toots at us, even though we're already there. Quickly, she says, I've got a client to call back. I pile into the car and Mum zips onto the motorway. One day, there'll be a school near our house, but it hasn't been built yet. So we have to come to this little brick school in this little brick town and drive past all the farms to get home. Look at the tractors, Leo says, pointing out the window. The grass and the cows that were there yesterday have gone, and the ground is being tilled into brown rows. What are they doing, Mum? Is it another subdivision? Asks Heather. Let's hope so, Mum says. I don't think Dad could handle another oat conversion. I feel sick, says Leo. The wind makes me feel funny. Just look straight ahead and stop reading, says Heather. You shouldn't be allowed to sit in the front if you're going to read like that. I hope you kids will be good for Dad tonight, Mum says. You know this weather makes his knee play up. Oh, Mum, do you have to work? Heather asks. I've got to make hay while the sun shines. It's funny to think of Mum making hay, wrapping up big rounds of dry grass and purple plastic. Really, Mum helps people buy houses, which has nothing to do with hay. Why does everyone want to buy houses in summer? Everything looks nicer in the summer, so that's when people put their houses on the market. But why do people change houses? Why don't they just buy one house and stay in it? Well, sometimes investors buy rental properties and sometimes people have kids and need more space. Mum changes lanes so she can turn right into our town. I see her eyes check the rearview mirror to make sure there's no one coming up behind us. And sometimes, if you overcommit yourself, the bank forces you to downsize. Mum drives in past the calves' poor whenua that guard our town. The trees behind them shake and sway, but the poor whenua stands straight and sharp. After dinner, Dad comes home and Mum goes out. We sit in the lounge watching funny videos and doing our homework. I smear layers of glitter gel onto my diorama's cellophane waves. Suddenly, there's a clatter as one of the people on TV gets frightened by a dog dressed like a spider. We all crack up laughing, especially when they do the slow motion replay. But then Leo's laugh turns off like a tap. Heaviness infects the room. I look up to see Dad standing over us. His body is taut. He holds a rolled up farming magazine which he strikes on the palm of his left hand. All we can hear is the laughter on the TV and the thwack, thwack of the magazine hitting Dad's hand. If we're all very quiet, he might go away. But Heather can't help herself. Stop it, Dad! We're trying to watch TV! Dad doesn't say anything. He just keeps beating the magazine against his hand like a drum. Leo and I smile nervously. At this point, it's still possible that this is a joke. Just Dad keeping us on our toes. Ha ha. Thwack. Thwack. Dad! Heather groans, rolling her eyes. But now she's pushed him too far. That's it! He barks. We're tidying up. I freeze, wishing I could shrink down to the size of my diorama Dawn and ride away onto Leekum's back. Leo reaches for the remote and turns the TV off, but Heather isn't having it. She leaps up and puts her hands on her hips. Mum said we could have screen time if we tidy the kitchen, and we did tidy the kitchen. I don't care. What more do you want us to do? Heather shrieks. Lick the floor with our tongues? Dad goes red. Get up, all of you, he yells. We're going to clean out the garage. Get up! Get up! Heather sobs with rage. Dad hauls us to our feet and pushes us one by one through the door into the hallway, smacking Heather around the ears with his magazine to quicken her pace. He herds us all into the garage. It doesn't look that messy to me. He opens the roller door and drives his Land Cruiser out, and then comes back inside and lowers the door behind him. We stand in the hard, artificial light as Dad gets some black rubbish bag and hands them out. Heather tries to snatch hers, and Dad gives it a shake that also shakes Heather. She tugs hard at the same moment he lets go, and she stumbles back against the workbench. Fill them up, Dad says. With what? Heather asks. Just fill them. Dad takes some shopping bags stuffed with old clothes and shoves them into his rubbish bag. Mum's saving those to put in the hospice bin, Heather says. Dad just picks up another bag of clothes, and Heather tries to wrestle it off him. I can keep them in my bedroom until next time we go into town. I don't want this junk in the house. But Mum's saving them! Heather bear hugs the bag, but Dad flings her off it, sending her flying into the workbench again. You're an idiot! Screams Heather. Dad roars and stands over her, boxing at her with the bag of clothes until she cowers on the floor. Leo wails. Dad straightens up and scans the garage. Heather, Dad says, put the bikes on the racks. Rosa, Leo, I want all that stuff in the corner thrown away. We look at the stuff in the corner. Heather's basketball, the old Elsa costume that's too small for me, and lots of Leo's Meccano. I put the ball in the bag without looking at Heather, then the Elsa costume. I don't really mind throwing it away. It's babyish anyway. Then I pick up a piece of Leo's Meccano, and Leo starts to cry. I put it down again. Dad walks over and shoves it into the bag. Leo tries to talk, but he's crying so hard and Dad can't understand him. Mum told him to put his Meccano out here, Heather says. Dad just keeps shoveling. Mum told him to put it there. You can't throw it away. It's not fair. Now we're all crying. We stand around with our half-empty rubbish bags as Dad clears everything off the workbench that isn't tools. Old school books, the plastic horse I got from the school fair, and finally the jars of Heather's homemade strawberry cheer jam. Dad throws the first jar into the bag and we hear it smash against the concrete floor. He smashes the second one and the third as though he's in a trance. Heather's face goes hard. She turns and slinks from the garage. Dad keeps smashing the jars until they're all ruined, and then he looks up. Heather stands in the doorway, holding the golden man with the glass rugby ball. She lifts him above her head and then drives him into the concrete floor. The glass shatters and pieces ping all over the garage. The golden man bounces off the floor, landing bent at Dad's feet. Dad screams, some kind of roar like an animal. He picks up the golden man and advances towards Heather. Heather turns and flees through the door into the hall. I hear her running feet and then her bedroom door banging shut. Leo runs out in front of Dad. "Dad!" he says. But Dad brushes Leo away and storms after Heather. I hear him force her door open. I hear her scream. Leo stays in the garage, silently putting the last pieces of his Meccano into the rubbish bag. I creep down the hall and peek through the crack in Heather's door. Dad pushes Heather onto the bed and springs on top of her. He holds the golden man with his sharp glass stump into the air. Heather stops screaming and goes quiet. Then something stops in Dad too, and he lowers his fist and gets off Heather's bed. I hide behind the door and he walks right past me without seeing. He limps down the hallway and back into the garage. When the coast is clear, I sneak back in too. Dad, Leo and I tie up all the rubbish bags. We sweep and mop the floor. Dad drives his Land Cruiser back in and closes the roller door. It's dark and we trail off to bed. The silence coming from Heather's room keeps me awake. Mr. Peterson can't open the school hall windows. If he did, all our things would blow around. So we're all getting hot and sticky as we set up our animal displays. Some of the dioramas are really bad, but some of them are pretty good. Madison made a wolf in a forest. Her moon actually glows. Aiden made a polar bear in the North Pole made of ice in a chili bin. It's pretty amazing, but it's melting fast. I fluff up the glittery cellophane waves. "Something's happened to your killer whale's fin," says Mr. Peterson. "That's because it's in captivity," I say. "That's what happens." "Hmm," says Mr. Peterson, and I can tell he doesn't really believe me. He just thinks I've got a defective whale. "Did you know he killed his trainer?" "Who?" "Talikum. Heather said I should have made a diorama with Dawn being dead. We were going to make her guts out of ribbon." "Settle, Petal," Mr. Peterson says. He turns to the class. "The year ones and twos are arriving in a minute. Is everyone ready?" There's a shriek from the corner. Aiden's polar bear has fallen off the cardboard ice float, which is now teetering on the few remaining pieces of ice. "Very scientifically accurate," says Mr. Peterson. He pats the howling Aiden on the shoulder. We all watch as the polar bear slides off the ice float and sinks into the bottom of the sea. It's strange leaving Talikum at the end of the day. I hope he won't be lonely in the school hall. When we get home, Mum brings Leo's mattress back inside and makes his bed. Heather finds two packets of vegan muesli bars in the back of the cupboard, and we eat sneakily in front of the TV. Then the door bangs and we can tell Dad's home. "Let's go to the lake," says Heather. We can hear Mum and Dad arguing from our rooms as we change into our togs. Mum's voice sounds tight and hard. "Well, maybe if you made bonus like you said you would, I wouldn't have to work every hour of the day and night. It's a bit hard when everyone's converting to bloody oats." I hear Mum's keys rattle and she says, "Make sure the kids get some dinner." But we're not hungry anymore. So when she leaves, we grab our towels and yell that we're going to the lake. We run down the middle of the new roads, jump onto the empty beach and charge into the water. I dive beneath the surface and orca flip back in a spray of droplets. Heather and Leo race each other, and Heather pretends that Leo's winning. Then Heather practices her backstroke while I race Leo. After a while, Heather returns to the bank and sprawls out on her towel. I get out of the water and lie beside her. The shadows are getting longer and we have to keep moving our towels to stay in the sun. My tummy growls. "Do you think we should go back?" I ask. "No, not until Mum comes home." "Dad will be mad." "Who cares? He's just jealous he can't swim." Heather gets up and runs back into the water. I draw pictures of Talikum in the sand with my finger. Then I hear Leo shout and I look up to see Heather hanging in the sky, climbing through the golden light on the suspension bridge. What are you doing? I call. I'm going to dive off, yells Heather. She's a dark shadow against the glowing clouds. Don't be ridiculous. Leo wades out of the shallows and the two of us stand like soldiers, hands saluting the low sun as we watch Heather inch her way across the wrong side of the bridge. She stops once she's well clear of the rocks below and raises her arms above her head. Geronimo! Her body arcs through the pink sky and slips into the lake. Cool, says Leo. But I'm scanning the shadows on the water, waiting for Heather to pop back up and take a breath. Heather? I jog to the edge of the lake. Heather! From the silence, there's a sudden splash and Heather's surfaces, gasping for air. We applaud as she swims towards us and wades ashore. Me next, Leo says. You're too little, and it's too dark, I say. And it's too cold, Leo says. Heather picks up his towel and bundles him inside it. Maybe we should go home, she says. We hear the sound of a motor and turn to see car headlights coming down the empty cul-de-sac. I think it's Dad, says Heather. The car comes as far down the road as it can go. The engine switches off, but the headlights stay on. The driver's door opens and Heather turns and runs into the lake. Dad gets out of the car and walks down the grassy slope towards the beach. Leo follows Heather into the lake and then I follow too. Time to go home, calls Dad. We swim a little further out and tread water. Come on, kids! He's using his nice dad voice. It's bedtime! What happened to dinner time? Calls Heather. Mum says you were supposed to make dinner. His body stiffens. You didn't get any dinner because you've been out here the whole bloody night. We keep pedaling beneath the water. Get in the car and I'll heat up some pizza. We're vegan, yells Heather. Fine, eat what you want. We're not hungry, yells Heather, even though we are. And it's not cold, adds Leo, even though it is. Dad stands still for a moment and then walks back up the slope, reaches into the car and pulls something out. It's Heather's hockey stick. He strides back down to the chain fence. Get out! Why would we? Because I said so. He smashes the hockey stick against the bollard. It makes a loud, cracking sound. He smashes the bollard again. You're ruining it, yells Heather. Get out of the bloody water. But instead of moving towards him, we shimmy our legs like tails and float further away. But Dad kicks off his shoes and walks onto the sand. He wades into the water. We all swim a little further out. All we can hear is the sound of our panting and the quiet whoosh, whoosh of our legs beneath the water. A fat raindrop lands on my cheek. Come here, you little bastards! He's up to his waist now. Make us! Dad throws the hockey stick at her head. Heather dives out of the way, but it hits her elbow and she cries out. Dad lunges through the water until it's up to his shoulders. He steps forward again and again, until we can tell he can't touch the ground anymore. He starts doggy paddling towards us. He's not very good at floating. He keeps sinking beneath the water and splashing as he comes back up. Another raindrop falls, and then another. Dad slowly approaches, and we slowly float further away. We watch as the sun sinks in the sky behind him. We watch as the look in his eye changes slowly to fear.
The Pet Podcast was written by Catherine Van Beek and produced at ORFM, Otapoti, Dunedin. Music is by Jolyn Mulholland. The intros and outros are read by me, Tina Turntables. Thank you to Creative New Zealand and New Zealand On Air for making this podcast possible. You can listen again and find further episodes of Pet at ORFM. That's oar.org.nz. This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.